This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Shelton Muller.
Hi, and welcome to episode 185 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com. And joining me on the line once again via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton Muller. How are you?
I'm well. Back from Blackwater and Mackay and, all around Queensland and stuff. And
Made a few new enemies.
Yeah, quite a few new enemies. Actually new friends. The enemies can go and, if anybody's read my blog about being to Blackwater, they'll know what Bruce is referring to.
Yeah.
It was very interesting. Actually, of all the blog posts I've ever written, that one probably had the most responses, I'd say. I don't get a lot of responses on my blog. Lots of people read it, but not a lot of people leave comments.
Yeah.
So I don't, that's okay. As long as they read it and get something from it, that's fine. But that particular one generated a few more comments than usual because, of course, of the fairly controversial nature of it, you might say.
The pointed nature.
Yeah, it was fairly pointed. I thought, people who did what they did in Blackwater should, hopefully hear that I heard about it, and I think they're very small.
Yeah.
I don't want to dwell on those because the people who actually attended the workshops in Blackwater were just wonderful.
Yeah.
And I miss them already.
They got a hell of a lot more out of it than the other people did.
To be honest with you, they, by not attending the workshops, not saying that everyone has to attend our workshops, that would be nice, but I'm not saying that has to be the case, but by opting to be against it rather than for it, they have actually empowered photographers more than they wanted to.
Right.
Because if you're already a certain level and you get taught a certain technique, if you're at a certain level, say more further along the path of photography than say your other people, and you come to a workshop, you will benefit more because you understand it more deeply.
Yes.
You can apply it more across the board. You've got more boards to apply it across, I suppose.
Yeah.
If you're a newbie to photography, relatively speaking, then you will learn the same technique, the same principle, the same method, but you won't be able to apply it as richly or as broadly or as deeply because you don't have that level of experience. So by actually being against the workshops and not attending, they disadvantaged themselves and advantaged the photographers who came along, who are now closer to where they are.
That's right. I mean,
it's all the whole thing about, being closed in, as it were, with regard to your photography just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And the grand masters of photography in this country are men who are actually well known for sharing their techniques and, doing workshops and seminars and speaking and openly being, quite educational about where they are in their photography and how they got there. And the ones that you never hear from, or you hear about every now and again, are often, the ones who are very, very close. Not always, but the photographers who are the upper echelons of photography in this country and probably many others are those who openly share. So I think that my point was made in that blog that you do yourself a serious disservice by being like that,
Yeah.
But we had a wonderful time in Blackwater. A really great little group of people. We ran our film noir event twice. It became that popular within the week. We advertised a second one just a couple of days out, and people turned up, and that was great. We just used how in the middle of a park you can have like a little country town.
Hold that thought. The great thing about small country towns is just how quickly word gets around.
That's true. Yeah.
And so I suppose what you've experienced is exactly that people who've attended your first film noir have told the entire town in 24 hours flat, look at these amazing pictures that they taught me how to take.
Thank you, Facebook.
And that will have enticed the rest of the town to come along to the second one. So
It was great.
Parks in the middle of towns.
Yep. Yeah, you know how you have these parks in the middle of towns, and in the middle of it is, they've stuck a locomotive, there's a locomotive in the middle of the park in the middle of town. Well, we used that locomotive as our, basically our train station where the gangster gets caught out for stealing the rich millionaire daughter's money, listen, sweetheart, I've got the money and I'm gone, it's all a bit of fun from that point on. And look, they absolutely loved it. We did it three times, twice in Blackwater and once in Mackay. And it went when, again, we found an old, you know, we found a fellow who was restoring a locomotive, and, you know, there was only a, like a section of it that we could actually use. So we got a local who had a 1930 Ford Tourer car that came along, and, you know, he loved having the whole thing photographed. And yeah, it was a really great event. So while there were the naysayers and the persecutors, more, you know, there was just a much more positive response. And we just had a really good time up in Blackwater and Mackay. So thank you to photographers in both those towns, because you made our time up there really quite wonderful and memorable.
Excellent.
And to those photographers who, you know, poo-pooed the whole idea and went around tearing down posters and all sorts of things. I mean, how small-minded can you be, really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing, and the thing that grabs me the most about that is, you know, I mean, maybe I have a unique perspective, maybe I don't. But I feel like as somebody who's stepping out of their audio career and into a photography career, I feel like I'm stepping into an industry that is far more crowded than the one I'm leaving. You know,
wow.
Like every man and his dog's got a camera these days. Not every man and his dog's set up to do audio.
No.
And in a marketplace like that, there's even less room to be that close-minded. Because I'm sure that, you know, if that's the way they feel about other photographers, then there are probably elements of that personality that infect the way they deal with their clients as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. You make an interesting point, especially, my friend, in the light of recent events in your life. Considering, you know...
The job offer. Yeah.
Yeah, and the decision you made regarding that, you make an interesting point.
Yeah, well, look, you know, people have obviously been interested to hear what happened on that front. So now that has been and essentially gone, I can tell the whole story now. What happened was through a chance encounter at another business conference, I met this guy, and he said to me, "So how long have you been doing photography?" And I said, "Well, actually, you know, I've had a camera in my hand since I was 9. I said, "But this is not actually my day job yet. I've been an audio engineer for the last 24 years, and I'm actually in the process of trying to move across into photography as a full-time career, like doing a career change." And he said, "Have you got a business card?" And I said, "Yeah, I have." And he said, "Well, you know, throw it this way." He said, "Because our company's looking for a couple of staff photographers." And so I said, "Oh, okay, cool." So I gave him a card and, you know, honestly didn't expect anything to come of it. And, you know, it was only 4 or maybe 5 days later at the most, I got this phone call from this guy, Sam, who turned out to be the creative director at this publishing company, according to Sam, they are Australia's largest privately owned publishing company, and they produce like 50 magazines a month.
It's a big stable.
Yeah. Mm. And while the rest of the industry tends to be, you know, letting go of full-time staff and using more freelance people, these guys are actually building up their internal workforce, and they've already got 7 full-time staff photographers. And so anyway, Sam had rung me on the Tuesday afternoon and said, "You know, can you come in Thursday morning for a chat?" So I went, "Okay, yeah, no worries." And he said, "And bring a portfolio." And I was like, "A portfolio? Oh my God."
Boy.
You know, so I had to come home Tuesday night, find a bunch of images, get them printed the next day, went in for the interview, well, you know, just a chat, and I met with the creative director and the head photographer. I had about 15 images that I'd had printed up at 8x12 inch, and they sat there flicking through them, and they were just like, "Wow, whoa, whew. Nice." Mm, you know,
that's nice.
It was just like continual comments every
better
image.
It's better than, interesting.
Yeah, different.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, so they were very, they seemed very interested in me. And Sam even said to me, "You know, we don't normally talk money at the first interview." He said, "But, you know, we can offer you this." And so I said, "Well, look, you know, we should, you know, I obviously need to talk to Kath about, you know, how this job, if I was to take it, would impact on our family life," because there were, you know, pretty much two weeks of every month where I'd be traveling all over Australia, and then 2 weeks of the month where I'd have to commute down to the middle of Sydney from Gosford. And obviously, you know, they, you know, Sam and the head photographer, they needed to have a bit of a chat about me, you know, without me there. So we agreed that we'd have a chat the next day. So I said, okay, beautiful. So off I went to, you know, off to my day job at ARN.
Yes.
So I got home that night, had a chat with Kath, told her all about it. And she said, look, you know, yes, the money is, you know, a little bit shy of what you're on now.
Mm.
But she said, I think we could make do, we could survive. Mm-hmm. And she said, you know, and obviously you'd pick up extra photography work, you know, weddings and portraits and that sort of stuff.
Yep.
And we'd probably...
And no doubt commercial work, et cetera.
Yeah, and other commercial work, and we'd probably pick up the shortfall, which I tended to agree with. She said, but to be honest, she said, I honestly think that 2 weeks a month of having to commute down to Sydney, like, because it would have meant driving. I would not have been able to take the train. Because I'd need to carry, you know, all my camera gear and my lights and everything pretty much everywhere I went.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been able to do that on the train. She said, I honestly think that would just kill you. You know, she said, you'd love it for the first month. And she said, and then you would just resent it because it would have undone all of the lifestyle choices we made in moving out of Sydney and up here to the Central Coast.
Yeah, true.
Which I tended to agree with.
Yeah, she makes a valid point.
And it was, you know, and the funny thing was, like, you know, because when I was sitting there talking to Sam and the head photographer, I was, my sort of internal dialogue was, oh God, how am I going to sell Kath on this idea of me being away for 2 weeks of every month? Mm-hmm. You know, and she said, look, that's really not the biggest issue. She said, we'll deal with that. She said, no, I just think it's the commute into Sydney that'll undo it. And,
yeah.
And I had to agree, you know. So when I did eventually get to talk to Sam again, I had to say, look, mate, as much as I love the offer and the job description just sounded like a whole lot of fun, I said the combination of the money, which was the lesser of two hurdles, but it was still a hurdle.
Yes. Yeah.
But more so the 2 weeks a month having to commute all the way back here into the guts of Sydney. I said, that's really the biggest killer, unfortunately.
Mm.
So, so he hinted that they might, you know, contemplate using me for some freelance work if there's stuff happening up this way, like sort of Central Coast way, or even further north from here, where it would be quicker for me to get to whatever it was than for someone to leave Sydney. So we'll wait and see. Something more might come of it.
Keep in touch.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, keep in touch.
You don't burn any bridges.
No.
And I kind of look back on it and I think, well, you know, this is the first job offer I've received, and it wasn't a job offer that I actively pursued. Like, it pretty much fell in my lap.
Yeah.
And I think, well, you know, I'll just keep doing the things that I'm doing. I'll keep networking when I have the opportunity to network, and I'm sure other things will come my way.
Fair enough.
And something else will come my way that will be more suitable. And the other thing, and I'm still to-ing and fro-ing over this, is... Do I want to leave one job where I'm working for the man to go to another job where I'm working for the man?
Fair enough.
Or would I rather get my own business up and running and, you know, go back to being self-employed?
Yeah.
So these are all things that I need to, you know,
yeah,
solidify in my own mind, you know.
It is very interesting, though, that you were given such... Well, for many photographers, it would be considered a dream opportunity.
Oh,
so
absolutely.
Early in your career as a photographer.
Absolutely.
And I imagine it was difficult to turn down in some ways.
It was very difficult. I said to Sam when we spoke again on the Friday, I said, mate, I have never been so conflicted over a job offer in my whole life.
Yeah.
This was the toughest decision I've ever had to make regarding a job.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you probably made the right one, as difficult as it was. We spoke about it on the phone, and I was very enthusiastic about the opportunity. But, you know, you were, as was I.
Don't get me wrong.
Oh,
but it was really a lifestyle thing. And, you know, and as I said to him, I said, you know, you don't realize, because I didn't mention it yesterday morning when I was there, but I said, up until 3 months ago, I was living 15 minutes drive from here.
Yeah.
You know, if I was still living there, this would be a no-brainer.
No-brainer,
I'd have taken the pay cut and done it for the for the lols.
Yeah. The laughs and, you know, yeah, because money isn't everything.
No.
You know, and I mean, really, how many Maseratis does one man need? You know?
At least three.
Yeah, but, you know, you're... No, look, well done, mate. I know it was very, very difficult. And there'd probably be people listening to this podcast going,
You're an idiot.
I love that job. Well, if you want that job, I would apply to...
Why didn't you call me? Mention my name.
You realize you're going to get a lot of emails now, Bruce, saying, you know, if the position's still available, I'd like to speak to these people. Oh, boy. Well, well done, mate. And I know it'll come your way because you have all the, you know, have all the skills that a photographer requires. You know, you have the people skills, the maturity experience, and the photography skills. So
well, thank
you'll,
you.
You'll have no trouble. You'll have no worries, mate.
Yeah, we were sitting there, you know, at the, they, you know, we basically went into their little boardroom and we're sitting there and they were looking through my photos and they'd given me a magazine, you know, of, you know, an edition of the magazine that I would have been photographing for had I taken the job. And so I'm flicking through that and you know, it was a four-wheel drive magazine. So basically, you know, the job was going out all over Australia with these, you know, four-wheel drive enthusiasts and photographing them driving four-wheel drives through the bush.
Right.
And one of the things that I noticed immediately was the use of fill flash to light up the underneath of the cars as they're, you know, bouncing up out of holes and things. And I made mention of it, and I said, "Oh, I see you do a fair bit of off-camera fill flash for lighting up the bottom of the trucks." And they were like, "Yeah, yeah, you're cool with that." And I said, "Oh, yeah, I've got, you know, flash wave triggers, and you know, do a fair bit of off-camera flash." And and they were, you could just see them mentally tick another box.
Yeah, that's it. You're in. So were they disappointed? You know, the, with the decision.
I think they understood.
Yes.
You know, I think they. Look, I can only guess, but the feeling I got from the whole thing was that they were very keen on me.
Yeah.
They could see that I had skills that they required. I understood enough of the technology. You know, we had some very rudimentary photographic conversation sort of in between it all, you know, from like a technical point of view, and I think they were probably just sounding out my level of technical expertise.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was like I didn't feel like I put a foot wrong, you know. I had an answer for everything they asked me, and I certainly left there with a very positive feeling. And you know, it was only, you know, having had a chance to think about it for 24 hours and talk it over with Kath that I, you know, sort of came to the realization that, like, as great as parts of it are, there are other parts that just are not working for me. So
yeah.
Anyway,
yeah, fair enough. Well, you know, no doubt there'll be a podcast coming up in the future sometime that you'll be announcing your departure from the audio industry because you've been offered, you know, something else that's quite, or you'll, you know, just make the break because you're going to be your own man, you know. So, well done.
Thank you, mate. As I said to you a couple of weeks ago, I made this decision in my mind probably 18 months ago to do the career change. And it was only about 3 months ago that I sort of sat up one day and went, why have I not set a date on this? You know, I've sort of let 15 months go by of having this idea in my mind that I'm going to make a career change at some point, but I haven't really set a time limit on it. And the one thing I have learned in my 40-something years is... If you don't set 42 years, if you don't set a time limit on these things, then it just becomes this mirage that you never actually get to, you know, because it's always just this airy fairy thing. I'm going to do that one day.
Yes.
And so I have set myself a time limit of June the 1st next year.
Okay.
Because that day will mark 25 years in radio, and I feel that's a pretty good milestone if I hit it. That's the point at which I want to be able to step out of my audio career and into the photography career full time. If it happens sooner, great. But that's my goal.
You heard it here first, folks. You heard it here first.
Yeah, and you can condemn me if I don't live up to it.
Yeah, you don't do it. Everyone, you know, all our thousands of listeners will be emailing you saying, "Chicken,
yeah, exactly,
chicken, hypocrite, loser."
Anyway.
Now, if I remember correctly, before I went off and got myself married to a beautiful woman and went off to America and all that kind of stuff,
yep.
we were going to talk about something, weren't we, on this podcast when I finally decided to return?
We were. I think our next topic of conversation, according to my little text file, was the frame as a compositional element and walking the arc.
Yeah,
so I don't
know
if you want to break that up into two episodes or if you just want to crank them both out tonight or...
Let me see how we go. I'd like to break them into two episodes so I don't have to work too hard. And of course, I don't have to think about what the hell I'm going to talk about next week.
Fair enough.
But, you know, I actually do want to start a series, and you can make a note of this. And please, if you're listening, listeners, I do want to start a series on understanding the exposure balances between flash and ambient and calculating for off-camera flash, well, for all flash, really. Without having to rely on technology, infrared technology, TTL technology, that kind of thing.
Right. So, so pretty much using the formula to work out your flash levels.
Yes. Yes. And the combinations of formulas that are available to make sure that you get the desired results. So maybe in a couple of weeks' time, we can start on a series of that. And I thought of that simply because. Glyn and I ran two flash workshops over the weekend, one on Saturday for our random customers, and one on Sunday for a photography group called Shutterbugs. Right. And I just watch my customers, you know, we explain it very slowly, very methodically. We go through the whole bit. You've been through our workshop and our flash workshop, and you know how methodical and slow we take that whole process and how we go through it in the afternoon. And yet I know that people still struggle. And with the decision-making process, how do I approach this? What is the method I employ? Which part of the formula do I calculate, you know, first, et cetera, et cetera? So I thought we could spend a little bit of time and a few podcasts actually going through those processes and situations to help photographers do their own off-camera flash.
Sure.
Without having to rely on Nikon CLS or Canon whatchamacallit or I don't know what they call their flash, off-camera flash infrared system.
TTLE or something? Or ETTL?
Yeah, but no, they have an off-camera flash system now, like the Nikon.
Oh, sorry, off-camera, right.
Yeah, yep. And Sony have two, don't they?
I believe they do. I don't use that, you know, because I've got my flash wave triggers, and so I just do it all manually.
Yeah, because you're the man. So I thought we could start on a series of that. So if that interests you out there, folks, if you are battling with understanding and approaching each situation when you are working with flash, we can do an entire series on it. Simply because, as I've said, I learn a lot from what my customers struggle with. When we're running workshops, and I suppose the more you teach, the more you learn about what people don't know and what they struggle with. So perhaps we can start that series, you know, in a couple of podcast time. But getting back to composition, which is essentially, you know, using the frame, you know, as a compositional element. If you think about it, and Glyn often says this when we do our workshops. You start off basically, your viewfinder is like a painter's canvas. It's a painter can look at his canvas, and he, unlike a photographer, can basically put anything he wants on it. A photographer is pointing his camera at something, and yet he's pointing his camera at it by choice. Something has caught the photographer's attention. That being the case, you should never ever underestimate the power of composition in your images. And that may sound like a very obvious kind of statement. And yet, every workshop we run, I notice that photographers are so overwhelmed by what we're teaching, you know, whether it be spot metering, depth of field, lens compression, or off-camera flash calculations, they will often go through the process, as we've discussed before, months ago on this podcast, about the hard. They'll get the hard, they'll go, right, I'm at 2.8, so that's minimized my depth of, and I've got a nice long lens on, so that's compressed it and brought the out-of-focus background closer to me. I have exposed for the face, so that's all good. Click. And they come over and show you how successful they've been in applying the technique, but the composition is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And without composition, your photograph is nothing. It's, you know, I often use musical analogies. when I am teaching photography, because, you know, a lot of musicians do photography and a lot of photographers do music. But either way, the processes are the same. Music has a lot of technicalities in it, yep, like photography does, and yet it, without proper composition, mm-hmm, music will suffer. You can, you know, you can have the same notes and chords, but you put them in the wrong order, and the song just will not come out the way it should. You know, a composition is an arrangement of elements, and in music, it's an arrangement of notes and chords. And then, of course, when you get into playing it, you have the arrangement of instruments, their volume, their, yep, placement, you know, all of those things come into play. In photography, it's exactly the same thing. You might have an assemblance of goods, you know, the person, the people, the landscape, the mountains, the river, they might all be there in the frame, but just like music, they need to be composed into an order that is pleasing to the eye, as just like notes are composed into an order that is pleasing to the ear. And the frame that you're working with, you know, is so important. Naturally dividing that frame, you know, we all know the division of thirds and Fibonacci's rules of mathematics that govern our core to some degree. But we often forget that the frame itself has a basis for composition. In that it has, you know, four walls.
Yep.
So it's sort of like, I suppose if we were to sort of lay it down, a photograph down flat, it's like an overview of a room. If you're looking down on a room, it has four walls, just like our frame has four walls. Right. And usually, you'll find that in a room, there'll be an arrangement of elements that you walk into. A photograph is pretty much the same. We don't often think of the walls of our frame as beginning points, reference points, you know, leading points for the photograph, but they actually are. And I see this a lot in our workshops where people have just randomly put something there in the frame, not thinking of its aspect ratio, not thinking of, you know, the walls that govern that frame, the canvas, you know, the borders of it, as limitation points and reference points. For instance, we have often spoken at our workshops about the geometry of an image.
Right.
You have a frame, it has a ratio, and whatever that ratio is up to you. You can even crop that ratio if you don't like what you're given. But understand that it has a geometrical value, and you work with that. I've seen a lot of photographs that we will establish at our workshops that are clearly geometric. A girl sitting on steps, a man leaning against a wall where there are bricks or lines, borders, shapes within that frame. And I often see photographers not seeing them. For instance, we did a photograph over the weekend, a girl sitting on steps. It was a very straightforward photograph, but with a flash overhead, the lighting was quite, you know, unusual and wonderful, and it made something very dynamic out of an ordinary situation, a girl sitting on three steps that came out from an old brick wall. Now, behind the girl and behind the steps is a large wooden frame of a very large door. Now, do you think anybody saw that? The three steps and the frame in which I had deliberately placed this model. Very few saw the geometry of it. And if you want to know what I'm talking about, go to our Creative Photo Workshop fan page on Facebook and have a look at our flash workshop August 7th and August 6th on our page. I'll find it. Let me find it while I'm here, because I just want to make sure. All right, I'm Creative Photo Workshops on Facebook. What did we call that? Those albums. And have a look at the photograph.
Flash Workshop August 6, 2011.
Yep, and Shutterbug Flash Workshop. Have a look in those two albums, and you'll see a photograph of a girl sitting on steps. Especially the one on August 6th. There's a photograph of a girl sitting on stairs, green door behind.
Yep, I'm looking at it.
You know the one that I'm... Yep. That's
my door.
Yes, you know that door. You've been there, right? Yeah. Now, there's a lot of geometry in that photograph, mm-hmm, right? You've got the leading lines. You've got the stairs receding in perspective.
Yep.
And the frame of the green door behind a model with feet used as leading lines, legs used as leading lines up to her face, which incidentally, which going against my grain completely, is right smack bang in the middle of the frame.
Yeah.
But it has reason to be because of all the other geometric elements within the frame.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept telling our photographers, now stand, because I was standing there with the flash overhead and holding the flash for them on the stand so that it came up and over the model and she was looking up toward it, posing for the light, and, you know, it formed all the shadows that we wanted. And people would, our customers would just come up and plonk themselves any old where. Now, we're going to talk about that, which is walking the arc, right?
Yep.
But they would plonk themselves any old where and just photograph it. No one saw the frame of the door behind her. No one saw the parallel lines of the stairs, the parallel lines of the large beams behind the stairs and the bricks. No one saw the leading lines of her legs, deliberately placed to be so. And, you know, the general geometry that points to the girl's face. Then we've got a flash, bam, straight over the girl's face.
Mm-hmm.
So everything is about look at her. Yep. You know, in that photograph. There's so much else going on, but we've deliberately pointed everything to say, look at her, even though she's right smack bang in the center, which normally doesn't work.
You know what else I pick up out of this image?
Yeah.
Is where the bricks turn in on the sides of the image, where they turn in to go in towards the door frame, those lines of those bricks also point to the vanishing point, which is where her head is.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. That's true. And a vanishing point is exactly what we're really talking about. It's an excellent, excellent to bring that out. No one saw it, or very, very few. I would say, look, you should be photographing right smack bang in the middle. And then if you're going to do something else, go right round to the side. And we'll talk about that, you know, maybe in our next podcast.
Yeah.
And walking the arc and the value of that. But no one saw the geometry of it. They would, and so their photographs are going to be slightly off. Now, if you're going to go off, go really off.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going to tilt your horizon, don't be, you know, half-hearted about it. Tilt the damn horizon.
Yeah.
If you're going to be off in your geometry, go way off. And that way it doesn't look like a mistake. That way it doesn't look like an oversight.
Yeah.
It looks like something you've deliberately done to say, hey, this is how I saw it. But if you're going to be just slightly off, then your whole photograph will suffer. It's not going to have the frames within frames that composition, you know, uses very effectively, that our compositional techniques rely upon. A lot of frames within frames basically say to the viewer, look at this. A lot of vanishing point, geometry. All of those things are what we use within the boundaries of our frame to say, look at this. And I would have to gently nudge each of our customers, like within, they would be 12 inches out, 18 inches out, and they just plonk themselves, photograph, and get out. Now, I understand that they feel the pressure of the other customers who want to get in and take the photograph, but how much time does it take to go 12 inches across to your right and take that photograph? You know, half a second?
Yeah.
You know?
I just say, the wider your focal length, the more that's exacerbated.
Absolutely. Yeah. And this was a very wide focal length. You know, I think this was taken on my Nikon D700 at about a 15 millimeter focal length.
Yeah, right.
Which I have to do with the Tamron 10-24 that I was using because it will vignette before, you know, at any wider focal length. So I had to do that. Now this was a test shot. You know, I had to make sure, I wanted to check the exposure was right. I wanted to give them a sample idea of what we're looking at here photographically, why I came up with this concept. And so I went in, 3 seconds, bang, and I'm out. And I don't like to spend ages taking a photograph because I've got paying customers and they want to take the photograph. My job is to establish it, go through the rules of the lighting, explain it all, take a test shot, and maybe see if I can get a shot for Facebook or my blog. That's my job. But I know I have experience and I've done this a lot of times, but to me it just seems logical that I can see the frame, I can see the stairs, I can see the vanishing points, I can see the geometry. It takes me 2 seconds to line that up and do it.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, I thought about it. And so often I see photographers getting excited by a subject, but not understanding that composing that subject is the only way that it will succeed. Mm-hmm. Using the frame as a reference point actually means making things either parallel or extremely unparallel. The other aspect of our frame is that the four corners of it are leading points. We don't think of the four corners of our frame as places to start a photograph. And yet they're given to us as a godsend to say, hey, if you bring something from this corner and take it to, you know, the Fibonacci dynamic point within the frame, you know, those nice intersecting points of, you know, where we like to place things in our frame.
Yep.
You're missing out. And again, I see a lot of photographers at our workshops completely disregarding those four corners. To me, those four corners are a godsend. What can I put here that will lead? You know, we all know, we've all heard about leading lines, but we don't really think about what it means. What can I use this corner for, this godsend of a compositional placement? To say, hey, I'm going to lead something from this or pretty close to this to take me up to the thing that I want everybody to see. I'm a very, you might say, very anal about my leading lines, and yet I do so subliminally. I'll take a photograph. I took a photograph at a wedding a while back, and I framed it very quickly, and yet when I look at it, the leading lines go smack bang into three corners of the frame.
Yeah, right.
And it was almost, subliminal to me. I hardly gave it a moment's thought, but I'm so used to doing it that now I will tilt that camera ever so slightly or move it in an angle ever so slightly to make something come from the corner to the subject. And it works. It's extremely simple, but it works. I suppose, you know, all we're really saying is, give that some thought. When you approach anything, look at the geometry of it, and see, well, how does this fit within the four walls and the four corners of my frame? How do I make this not just what it is, but how do I make this fit within the context of my canvas? And I don't think photographers are actually doing that by and large. We get excited with the subject, but not actually thinking about the fact that it alone will not suffice as, you know, in a photograph. It itself is not going to work unless I use my frame as my canvas, as the borders. There's nothing outside those borders that you know matters. Everything that happens within those borders, and I have to make those borders my world. And are we really thinking about that when we place something within a frame, or are we just getting excited about what we're seeing and doing? I understand the whole getting excited thing. I really do. But you got to take a breath. You've probably seen that yourself, Bruce.
Oh, mate, I'm guilty of it.
Uh-huh.
We had our monthly shoot on Saturday, and I don't suppose you're reading my blog, but I haven't
had a chance yet.
I posted a handful of images from Saturday's shoot, and one of the things that I wrote about, because I took your advice a few months ago where you said, don't let your blog just be "this is what I'm doing" all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, try and incorporate something that's at least marginally educational about it. You know,
yep.
And one of the things that I said was, if I had anything negative to say about our shoot yesterday, as I was writing this yesterday, you know, and the shoot was the day before, I said it was as my performance as a photographer. And it's not that the images are necessarily bad, but I said where I feel I let myself down was because I followed the mantra of my mentor just a little too closely, where he's always telling us, get closer.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an instance where we were shooting on a working sheep station with a couple of great models.
Yeah.
And I sort of got home and started looking at my images and went, I framed everything so damn tightly, I can't see any of the great character of the place we were shooting in. it's interesting that we should end up talking about composition today, because it was, you know, I sort of followed your rule of, you know, when it comes to portraiture, get closer and then get closer.
Get closer again, yeah. This is, you work with Desiree, I see.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. She was fantastic, and so was Lucas. But yeah, I just feel like I you know, every shot I've, you know, gone so tight that, you know, there was not, there aren't many images amongst those where you can actually see any of the sheep station that we were on, you know, and there was some great stuff to be seen around there. And I kind of kicked myself later because I thought, why didn't I leave some of that in? I mean, I was sort of pursuing that idea of remove everything that's not critical to the image, but I think I might have gone a little bit too overboard.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking through some of your photographs now, and I'll tell you what you have done, which I really applaud, is that you haven't relied on, you know, Desiree being an attractive subject. You know, she's certainly a pretty girl, and, you know, he has a womanly figure and all of those things, which, you know, the average photographer might say, right, that's good enough.
Right.
I love the way that in a couple of these, particularly, you have, you know, definitely posed her for the light.
Yep.
And I love the fact that you've done that very deliberately. I can see that you've done that.
Right.
Minimal depth of field, good light. You've done all of those things. And your composition, well, your composition is what it is. I really can't fault it. Yes, perhaps you could have worked with the context of the station a little bit more, if that's in what you're intended to do. But my, you know, I'm looking at one photograph now of Desiree on your blog.
Yep.
And you've used the, it's her back to the camera.
Yep.
Wearing the hat.
I love
and,
that shot.
Yeah, yeah. But you have, you, yeah, but you, what my point is exactly what you've done. You've composed the image.
Right.
And you've used the fence posts. Now you're straight on,
yep.
right?
Yep.
You're
yes.
straight on here. And so your fence posts are geometric.
Yes.
You know, they're parallel, pretty much parallel to the frame.
Yep.
If you had walked 12 inches, 18 inches to the left or right, yep. they wouldn't have been.
Yeah.
Now, some photographers would say, well, why should they be parallel? But to me, it's annoying if it's just slightly off. You know, it's if it's slightly off, then it's a mistake. If it's really off, then it's another chance at geometry.
Yeah.
You've done actually what I think is exactly what I'm talking about. You've thought about where to stand and you've used the geometry, and that has to do with walking the arc. And I'd like to probably devote next week's podcast to that little mantra that we use at our workshops.
In the interest of full disclosure, I will confess that I was not 100, well, not exactly at 90 degrees to that fence, but I was as close as I could get. There was an obstacle to my left that prevented me from getting exactly perpendicular to the fence, but I'm pretty darn close to it.
Well, you were conscious of it.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
that, you were conscious of it. Now, if there was something to your left or right that prevented you from doing that, a little bit of a fix in Photoshop with a perspective and the crop tool can't fix.
Well,
but,
hey, it fooled you, so...
Oh, it's slightly off, but, you know, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, you know.
Yeah.
But if you'd gone a little bit more, it would have been off to the point where I would have said, Bruce.
Yeah, exactly.
Really? You know?
Yeah.
And that's what I'm talking about. You know, you've used the frame as its own compositional reference point.
Yep.
The walls are a compositional reference point. The walls of your frame are a compositional reference point. You've used them. The corners of your frame are a compositional reference point. We start here, or it must refer or interplay with this wall or this corner. And or if your intention is to crop, then see the photograph as cropped to the aspect ratio that you want to crop it to.
Right.
But a lot of photographers at our workshops, when they come up and say, is this what you're thinking of? Is this what your idea was? We'll look at it and we'll go, yes, technically, you got that right. But look at your composition. They go, oh, look, I'll crop it later. Why? Why buy a 12-megapixel DSLR and reduce it to 8 or 6 because of your bad composition?
Yeah.
You know, think about what you're doing when you put your camera to your eye. You've got four walls and four corners.
Yep.
Now, those are awesome, awesome points to say, hey, you know, this is where we're going to lead from. This is what we're going to be next to, up against, you know, in context of, you know, all of those things come into play. Personally, I'm looking through these photographs and I'm thinking, good job, Bruce. Your composition, you've done all of those things.
Thank you.
Look, to be honest with you, the fact that you've got a great Tobruk Station is the name of the place, is it? To me is not a problem. I don't know what you're referring to in terms of what it had available. but you may have lost your models in the context. But, you know, I don't know. But look, you've taken home a point for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, to work on next time. But, you know, it looks to me like you've actually been very conscious of your composition. The photograph of Desiree with her arms crossed, just leaning against... Oh, no, she's sitting down, her hands up on her legs, one arm across.
Yep.
Yeah, lovely composition. But you've used the edge of the frame and the corner. You've got her leg leading from the left-hand corner up to her eyes in the third, the dynamic third.
Yep.
To me, perfect. You've thought about your composition. Mm-hmm. And so many photographers don't. They, you know, they really don't. And I'd be very proud if I were you, dude. Very, very proud.
Oh, thank you.
Nice job. So don't stop bagging yourself.
Now, look, well, as I said in the text of the blog post, you know, it's not that they're necessarily bad images. I just feel like I didn't come home with anything that showed the context of the place that we were shooting at.
Yeah.
I felt that was a little bit of an oversight on my part.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But hey, you live and learn.
Yeah, fair enough. No, do it next time.
Yep.
But your photographs are very... You're going to go back there and do a shoot?
We probably will, yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Cool,
yep.
Cool.
The people that run the joint were very happy to have us there and, you know, gave us the run of the place and, yeah.
Cool, so, cool.
Yeah,
so I got to read your blog more often. You got some good stuff here, man.
I see you didn't see the hip-hop...
hip-hop and guide numbers. I just saw that.
So,
do you put it up on Facebook when you update your blog?
I do, but I'm trying to make a point of only posting it under my Bruce Williams photography page on Facebook rather than under my personal profile.
Okay.
I'm trying to differentiate the two so that more people will follow my Bruce Williams photography page rather than just my personal profile. But maybe I need to promote that more.
Why not? You know what? I wouldn't be precious. Do it on both.
Well, there's that too. Yeah.
If I update my blog, it goes up on the CPW page. And, you know, it goes up on my personal, you know, because I am Shelton Muller and this is what I love to do. And, you know, I'm, you know, anybody who wants to see it, you know.
Yep.
So I put it up on everything. And maybe that's why I'm missing it. Because, I mean, I do... subscribe to your Bruce Williams photography page, but for some reason it doesn't come up on my feed.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Okay. So that's why I haven't seen them, dude.
Yeah, right.
But if you put it up on your Bruce Williams page, I would say, hey, Bruce has updated his blog. Otherwise, you know, I'm not thinking of it. I I'm not thinking about your that's why there's so many things to see. That, you know, if you put it up on your Bruce Williams page, man, I'd be there. Especially if it said hip hop and guide numbers. Be there, though.
Well, that's all about my flash that took a 6-foot stage dive into the concrete.
Oh.
Yeah.
How did it fare?
I'll leave you to read the post.
All right, I will. I think I'll read that. Hip hop and guide numbers. All right. Okay, fair enough. But yeah, look, I suppose the point I want to make for this podcast is essentially. And I don't want to go into the talk about walking the arc this time. Let's leave that for next time, because that's a very, very important thing. And I see it, you know, playing such an important role in composition and, you know, lighting, that I want to talk about it and devote another podcast to it. So stay tuned for next week.
Sure.
But, you know...
So before we wrap this up, for the people who are listening to this all around the planet who don't have the opportunity to get to a CPW... you know, workshop and actually have you guide them through these principles. What can someone do who is trying to get their head around these compositional tricks, if you like, you know, these little tools in your toolbox? What can they do to practice to get, you know, this concept of geometry and composition? Are there things they can do on their own to help develop that eye that will compensate for the fact that they can't get to one of your workshops?
Yeah, and that's a good question, a very good question. I think years ago, and I think I've actually mentioned this on the podcast, I was about 17, 18. I was working in a photo retailer, you know, and selling cameras and doing my thing. And a fellow walked in and he had it would have been something like a Nikon F2AS. And if you are an oldie like me, you're an old bugger like me. You'll know that a Nikon F2AS, where someone when I was about 17 was like, wow, it was the predecessor to the Nikon F3, you know, right. And it was like one of those cameras, you know, like it stood about 4 feet tall with motor drive and, you know.
Right.
And I, you know, had the big lens on the front, naturally walked in and I was impressed, you know, as you were at that age with someone with a big camera. And on the top of it, you know the old Dymo labels? You know, you pressed hard and you produced a label. And then it came out embossed. It came out embossed and you stuck it over the top and you stuck it on stuff.
Yep.
Well, he had one of those, a Dymo label, and, you know, stuck on the top of the prism of his camera. And I thought, I wonder what it says. So I made my way over to him and asked if I could, you know, help. How can I help you? And, you know, served him as a customer. But I kept glancing down to the top of the prism of his camera.
Right.
And I finally saw his camera as he turned around. And I saw the word, and I'll never forget this, think, on the top of his camera.
Yeah, right.
It means that every time he looked down to pick his camera up and bring it to his eye, he was reminded of the necessity of thinking. And that might sound really stupid, you know, really obvious, but I've seen it too many hundreds of times to know that many photographers don't think. Photography is a process, as we know, of both the emotional and the academic. Our hearts come into play and we say, wow, look at that, I'm going to take a picture. But unless we engage the mental faculties and employ the academic, our photograph will not succeed. It will not succeed. And it is a dual process of the heart and the mind. Engage the heart by all means, because that's what this is all about. You know, satisfying our creative core. That is what this is all about.
Yeah.
But the cerebral interplay with your heart is absolutely necessary. So to answer your question, if you are embarking upon a photograph, any image, before you take the photograph, check your frame. Think of the frame itself as the world in which your photograph will live and as its own inbuilt reference point. The four walls of your frame are a reference point to everything else within that frame. The corners are a reference point to say, what can I bring from this? Am I doing that? Or am I just pointing at something, getting excited about what it is, and going, wow, click. Because if you do that, your photograph will not be tweaked and it will not meet its potential.
Hmm.
So do what that man said on the top of his old Nikon F2AS and think. Don't just get excited, think. Then your photographs will succeed.
Yeah, and I guess something you haven't touched on, and I don't know whether there's an entire podcast worth in this, but the other thing is, yes, move yourself around to check out the compositional possibilities from different points, but also the focal length.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, as your focal length changes, that changes the way those leading lines will leave or enter the frame.
Mm-hmm.
In a big way, you know, obviously, as you know, your lens gets wider, so things become more accentuated. The longer your focal length gets, then the less those leading lines tend to be obvious.
Very true. I mean, leading lines become more obvious with a wide angle lens, of course. But I often use a person's, you know, limbs as leading lines, arms, legs, even the shoulder, you know, a shoulder, because the arm comes up to the shoulder and up into the neck. If you're doing a tight portrait, like the ones you did of Lucas and Desiree, you know, you have, and I don't know whether you consciously did it or not, but you have, and if it was subconscious, hey, good on you, because it seems to be something you do intrinsically now.
Right.
You've used arms and legs as leading lines.
Right.
And I think that's perfectly logical.
Okay.
And it may sound, logical may sound like a really weird word to use when we're talking about the creative, you know, Spock's approach to photography, you know. It's logical, Captain, but it is logical.
Yep.
It is logical that you would do that, because that's how we work a frame. We work the four corners and the walls of a frame. You know, you've done that with Desiree's arms and shoulders and legs, as you have with Lucas's as well. And that is the way to compose. Think it through. What is this? what does this photograph have within it as compositional elements, not just the subject itself, but what does the subject have that I can use to compose? You know, I love a C major seventh chord, but what's the point of it? You know, what's the point of it unless I use it in a composition? Unless I compose using that chord. The chord by itself sounds nice, but that's where it starts and ends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no point to it otherwise. And it's the same with photography. You know, we have a chord, we have notes within that chord that must form a melody that is pleasing to the ear. And tastes will vary in music. Some melodies I like, some melodies I don't like. What I act and I will respect a melody that I don't like if thought has gone into the creation of that melody. I might not listen to the song, but I respect it for the effort of the artist, and I respect the fact that other people like it because it's their taste. What I don't like is when, you know, it's just thrown together without care. A piece of music is not really, you know, given much care. Photography is exactly the same. I'm not one for, you know, I love guitar, but as I've often said, I would prefer four notes played by B.B. King in a bar than 16 notes played by Yngwie Malmsteen, you know, that have no melodic character to them. You know, those four notes by B.B. King are composed, you know?
Yeah.
And I've studied his style and I love what he does. You know, his swaps between the major and the minor pentatonic and all of those things. I love that about him. Mm-hmm. It's thought through, and those four notes move me more than Malmsteen or Satriani's 16 or 20 in that same bar.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because they are thought through. There's a bar. Now in music, a bar is a frame, you know? And within that frame, we place our notes. Photography is exactly the same. You know, think it through. Don't be excited about the notes just by themselves. Place them in their proper order so that they sound nice. And in photography, don't be excited about the elements. Place them in some kind of a semblance of order so that they look nice. The elements themselves are, yes, they're interesting and wonderful in the three-dimensional reality. But within the frame, that's a whole different kettle of fish altogether. And within that frame, use the frame itself as your reference points. The four walls and the four corners become your playground to say, what can I do with these and within these? Essentially, I suppose that's what I'm trying to say.
Okay, cool.
There you go.
Awesome.
Yeah, my philosophy for another week.
Fantastic. All right, and then next episode we can talk about Walking the Arc.
Yeah, let's. I really do, because I don't know whether it's just a phenomenon at our workshops or... No, actually, I see a lot of photographers doing it.
Mate,
I watch photographers all the time. And
I see it at our monthly shoots as well.
Yeah.
You know, more so the less experienced photographers.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, it's like trying to pull teeth, trying to get them to move.
Explain it. Oh. Glenn actually came up with an idea, and I'll repeat this next week because I don't and remind me if I forget, Bruce.
Okay. So
it's your fault if we don't do it. Glenn said, look, you know what we should do? We should get some rubber mats, and we should paint an X on them, and we should actually put them on the ground and say, stand here.
Yeah.
And he was deadly serious. Because, like you, he is frustrated with saying, no, look, this is where you should shoot it from. This is where it was set up to be shot from.
Yeah.
Don't just stand there and click from there. You know, X marks the spot. And it's ridiculous that we have to do this, but, you know, we have to think this way. But like you say, we're not bagging anybody. It's just we're not doing what that Dymo label said we should do.
Yeah.
We're not thinking. We're getting excited and we're not thinking.
I think there's a laziness in there as well, though. It's not
perhaps
only an absence of thought, it's an absence of willingness.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, well, I'm sure you've seen it, but in the environment that we were shooting in on Saturday, there was a section where there were some like picnic bench tables. You can see a couple of shots of Desiree leaning on them.
Mm-hmm.
And at one instance, I saw one of our photographers sitting at the picnic table, taking photos of Desiree and Lucas, who are 10 metres away.
Really?
And I'm like, oh. You don't sit down to take photos.
Yeah. And here again, but that's a classic case of the subject makes the photograph. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Desiree is a very attractive girl.
Yeah.
Right? There's no doubt about it. Otherwise, you know, she wouldn't be a model, I suppose. But she's a very, and maybe he was saying, wow, what a pretty girl. What a great figure. You know, what an awesome location. He was excited about the content. This is my point. Mm-hmm. You know, he's excited about the content. And he thinks that's going to make a great photograph. Well, that's not true. An oboe is a beautiful instrument. It makes a beautiful sound. But unless it produces notes within a composition, it's not going to be much good to anybody.
Yeah.
You know, it's. I think, you know, maybe it's because, you know, we're not, you and I and anyone who's photographed for a while, we're excited about the subject, but it no longer holds the same excitement because it itself as a subject is something we've seen shot, done before.
Yeah.
What we're excited about is the framing of that subject.
Yeah.
I probably in my earlier years was far more excited about the subject than I am now. You know, oh, look at that sunset, click. Mm. Oh, look at that awesome mountain, click. Whereas now, maybe the excitement about the subject has waned, having done that before.
Totally.
And we're thinking, now, yeah, that's a cool subject. But Shelton, you know, you've done this before.
Yeah.
So don't get excited about what it is. Get excited about how it to work it.
Yeah.
What we're going to do with it. How we can make that our own. A nice photograph of a pretty girl does not a great photograph make, as we've often said. Your photographs are, you know, a classic example of, hey, a pretty girl, but you've used the focal length, depth of field, composition, you've posed for the light. Love the way you've done that. And you've created some great photographs. I'm sure Desiree's stoked. I'm sure she's probably already said, can I have some of these?
Yeah, she asked for about 7 or 8 of them.
There you go. Yeah. Now, she's seen, what, 1,000 photographs of herself, if she's seen one?
Probably, yeah.
Right. And, you know, we've all worked with models. You and I, we've worked with models, and some of them say, oh, you know, like Nat in a bed, for instance.
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, we'll work with photographers that are complete and utter waste of time.
Yeah.
Because they just don't produce great photographs.
Yep.
And yet Nat and Abed, you know, two very good-looking guys.
Yep.
And yet that's what the photographer seems to think makes the photo.
But yeah.
Good photographers compose. They get the technicals right, which you have here in these photographs. You've chosen your focal length deliberately, chosen your point, your, you know, point of composition deliberately. You've done very deliberate academic thought processes to complete the image. That is why Desiree wants them, not because, you know, she's prettier in this one than she was in photographed by somebody else. Not at all. She's the same model, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, you know, really stop and do what that Dymo label said.
Mm.
Yeah. Think it
I completely agree with you, you know, because I know with my landscape work, I've definitely passed that point of being excited by the subject.
Yeah.
I know that there are times, you know, I can even think back a couple of years already where when we're in the States and Kath said, oh, don't you want to get a photo of that? And I was like, well, yeah, it's nice, but the light's crap.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't do anything with it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, exactly. We'll get a reference photo. You know, you and Max stand there. We'll get a family snap. But as for a photograph itself, yeah, exactly.
It ain't going on a calendar.
Nah, it's not going on a calendar. You know. Speaking of which, are you producing one for 2012?
I will be.
Okay,
I will be. I still need to get a few more images put together, but I'm most of the way there.
Okay.
I think I've got 9 already selected for the calendar, so I only need to shoot another 3.
Yeah, so. Yeah. I was just doing my math. Yeah, 3, that's the way.
Hey, listen, before we move on, we got an email from Rich, Richard Annable.
Oh, cool.
In relation to what we were talking about a few episodes ago. He said, of course I was listening. Here is the clause Shelton mentioned. As many images as possible will be presented to the client, but the client understands and agrees that although a particular photograph may be taken during the wedding, it is not guaranteed to be presented and agrees not to make requests for non-presented photographs. Regards, Richard. So yeah, it's just a follow-up to those who were listening a couple episodes back to our discussion of
that.
Clauses in wedding contracts. Yeah, thank you, Richard.
Yeah, that's actually a, you know, a very clever little clause, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
I might be just cutting and pasting that, Rich, into mine, if you don't mind.
I'll put it in the show notes so everyone can copy and paste it.
Or words to that effect. You might just have, you know, given us, you know, a lot of... you mind if we... Yeah, Rich, hey, let's put it out there. Hey, Rich, do you mind if we cut and paste your claws, dude?
I'm sure he would be honored.
Well, you know, it's a very good clause, and it'll save the photographer a lot of hassle.
Definitely.
You know, I mean, we don't have to be hard about it, but boy, oh boy, you know, it does become a bit of a problem. That's certainly worth considering. So, yeah, I might even cut and paste that one and put it into my contract, Rich. Thanks for that, mate. Very well done. Appreciate it. Nice to have your interaction on the podcast, you know?
Absolutely.
He's too busy these days. He used to like email us every week.
He did.
But now that he's Richard Annibale, the photographer, you know, he no longer needs us, you know? So, well, no, nice to hear from you, Rich.
And while we're on the subject of emails, please keep them coming in, theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.
We love to hear you.
Who's coming up this weekend to Sydney? Is it you or is it Glenn?
Good question.
Because I think one of you is running a workshop in Melbourne while one of you is running a workshop up here.
Yes, Glenn. That's a very good question. Why do you ask me these questions while we're on air?
Okay, well, we'll talk about it when we finish then.
Glenn, if I remember correctly, but right. We're accredited at News August 13th. I would say it's him.
Right.
That's the Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's Saturday. So I don't even know. We might both come up because our understanding your camera workshop has like three people in it or something.
Okay.
Then again, I don't know how many we've got for Sydney either.
Right.
So, you know, it might just be him on his own. I'll have to check. But as far as I know, it's him.
Right.
I'll take it from there. All right.
All right. So we're done?
Yes, I reckon we are.
Excellent.
I'm going to go down and watch a bit of TV and talk to my missus and do stuff like that.
Fantastic. Have
a glass of water. I really feel like a glass of water after all this talk.
Well, good to talk to you again, mate.
You too, mate. And, congratulations on the job offer.
Thank
congratulations
you.
Congratulations on the decision you made too.
Thank you.
It's a gutsy decision. I made, to be honest with you, in retrospect, I made exactly the same decision many years ago.
Did you?
Yeah, I had a similar situation thrown at me, and I made exactly the same decision.
Because of lifestyle?
Lifestyle, yeah, absolutely. Family and lifestyle. I was about 24 years old, and I was offered the run of a studio for an advertising agency.
Wow.
Yeah, it overwhelmed me in its potential. But, you know, I went home and, you know, I discussed it with my wife, and no, it was not going to meet our lifestyle expectations.
Yeah, right.
And that's why I made the decision. So, yes, in retrospect, you and I are very much the same, except it was, you know, I was a younger man, but, you know, for the same reasons I turned it down. Yeah. So, yeah, well done.
Thank you, mate.
No worries.
All right. Well, we will talk with you next week.
Bet. You bet. Look forward to it.
All right, mate. Have a good one.
You too.
See ya.
Bye.
Shutters Inc. For previous episodes, check out shuttersincpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@shuttersincpodcast.com.